Second hour of Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3. We got Colin Russo, Mike Rizzo. We got Christian Kapp behind the glass. We're at the City Place Studios over in downtown West Palm Beach. A midweek edition of the program. If you missed any of it today, you want to listen back, Russo and Rizzo on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, all those great places. Got Your Legends, written by Paul Embo and Mike Greenberg, is officially out. The 124 franchises in North American sports. There is a Mount Rushmore for every single one. Mount Rushmore, the four most iconic, prolific, biggest figures of that franchise's history. It's all ranked. It's all put together. It's all in the book. The author of said book, a New York Times best-selling author. You see him all the time on ESPN broadcasting, including Get Up in the Mornings, a fixture of sports radio from throughout his career, Mike and Mike in the Mornings back in the day. We'd like to welcome in Mr. Mike Greenberg now with the program now. Mike, how are we doing today? What's going on?
I am doing great. It is a pleasure to be with you guys. Colin, it's a particular pleasure to get the chance to chat with you. Your dad is on the back of the book. He wrote a very nice blurb for us. He wrote, if anybody knows how to put historical sports debates in book form, it's these two, meaning Hembo and me, which was, I was incredibly honored, like half the rest of the industry. I grew up sort of idolizing your father and learning from him and stuff like that. So it's a pleasure to get a chance to talk with both of you guys, and I'm interested to hear what you guys think of what we did.
Well, Greeny, I appreciate that. I'll forward that message. I appreciate that. If you listen to him on First Take today, he did about 10 minutes on Dave Pasch's travel schedule coming from the Missouri-South Carolina game and having to do the Arizona Cardinal game the next day. It's funny. You should take a listen to that. But Greeny, talk me through this. You've been involved in a lot of books. This is a tricky topic because you got to go through every single franchise and you got to come up with four. And some are a lot easier than others and some are a lot more difficult with the, and some have basically no history at all. So you're really digging for it. What sort of kind of came about with this topic between you and Hembo thinking that this is the cool thing that we wanted to tackle?
So it was Hembo's idea, to be honest with you. The first idea he had was, let's do the Mount Rushmore of every team in sports. We've done, all of us who have done sports talk over the years, have done a trillion Mount Rushmores, right? You've done the Mount Rushmore of this, that, and the other. So he said, let's do the Mount Rushmore of every team, 124 teams in the four major sports, the NFL, the NBA, the NHL, Major League Baseball. Terrific. So he does, if you know Hembo, and your father certainly does at least a little, he is so good at research, it's ridiculous. I have no idea how he does what he does, but he was able to distill things down to where most of the decisions were actually pretty easy. And we had a few criteria that we agreed on that we would use to break ties, but most of it wasn't actually that hard. So choosing the four franchise faces, the legends, which is where we got the title, Got Your Legends from, that wasn't that hard, but it was a fun exercise. And then I sit down and I'm going to write. What I really like the most is sports history. What I like the most about your father is that he has an understanding of and appreciation of sports history and stands up for it all the time. And I use this as my analogy all the time. I listen to sports talk show hosts say things like, well, I don't know a lot about Oscar Robertson. He was before my time. Well, if you don't have any understanding of the history of your subject matter, then how can you put into any perspective what's going on now? That would be like doing a political show and saying, well, look, I don't know much about FDR. He was before my time. So that strikes me as immediately disqualifying. So I like writing about the history. So I was going to write about the history of all of the teams and all of the legends. And we had to figure out, how are we going to organize them? Like, what, are we just going to do them by sport? And so I finally said, do you want to take a crack at trying to rank them all from 1 to 124? And so that's what we did. So the book is organized, the best team in sports all the way to the worst team in sports in terms of championship history, overall winning history, and cultural relevance. And they rank from 1 to 124. And then for every one of them, from the best to the worst, we picked them out Rushmore of every one of the teams. And I write an essay about every one of them, which brings a little bit of an element of sports history to it. So I hope there's something in it for everybody.
Greeny, what was the sport that you think was the easiest one for you to decipher who the best was? Like, was there, between the big four you guys did, which one do you think you had the better grasp of kind of knowing who the top four in each club were?
You know, once what we did was we set up, was a good question, but the answer is not not specific. We set up criteria, what we were going to base our, once you have the data in front of you, you just have to decide what's important to you. So the science are the numbers, right? There's a science and an art to it. The science is, these are the numbers. This is the winning percentage. This is how many championships they've won. This is how many Hall of Famers they've had, all those sorts of things. Then we had to make up our minds, what are we going to prioritize? And here was the first rule. Championships beat everything. So if you have two teams and you take a decade and one of them finishes last for 9 years, but wins the title in the 10th, and the other one is over 500 all 10 years, but doesn't win. In my opinion, the championship wins. That's a decision. It's an opinion. It's not, obviously that's not a fact. The data is all, those are numbers. Those are facts. They can't be argued with. The places that we made decisions were what we were going to prioritize. So championships come first. And then the cultural relevance part felt important to me as well. How important is this team to the history of its sport, to the history of American culture at large? Those are things that aren't always quantifiable, but in some cases they're fairly easy. So, and then we put them in tiers because you really can't compare the Montreal Canadiens to the Los Angeles Lakers. So they're in tiers. So the top tier has four teams, one from each sport. The second tier has eight teams, two from each sport. The third team has 16 teams, four from each sport. And so we did put them in an order, but what is more significant to how we ranked your team is what tier they're in more than how they compare to others. So for example, do you have the book in front of you? Otherwise, I'll have to guess. The first four, we call them the fabled four, because we didn't want to use the same names as the NCAA tournament, are one from each sport. So the Yankees are number one in baseball and number one overall. We agonized over Celtics Lakers. Mm. And again, going back to the criteria, championships trump everything else. While we were doing the book was when the Celtics won their 18th championship, breaking the tie with the Lakers. So the Celtics became the number one basketball team. So they're two. It's Yankees one, Celtics two, Canadiens three, Green Bay Packers four. People don't know enough about the Packers' history. They've won 13 NFL championships, which is more than any other franchise. They also have been in their home city longer than any other NFL team. So that's the top four, and then the Lakers are five. Mm. And by far the hardest thing to do was choosing between the Celtics and the Lakers. Because as you write in the book, the Celtics and Lakers are, to the NBA, what Ali and Frazier were to boxing at one time, bigger than everybody else combined. And so that was the hardest thing to do, was choosing between those two.
Mike Greenberg joining us now on Russo and Rizzo, ESPN 106.3. One team that you included in Tier 5, 62 overall in the 124, basically that the dead 50% mark of all the franchises in sports, was the Miami Dolphins. And you put together four there, Don Shula, Brian Griese, Dan Marino, and Jason Taylor to mix this up.
Let me stop you briefly.
Go ahead.
Let me stop you briefly. What you have just found, and I'm going to put this out on social media a little later this week. There was one huge mistake in the book. The book is 240 pages. There was one copyright mistake that none of us caught. I have to take the blame for it. Hembo takes the blame for it. Our copy editors take the blame for it, and everybody else did. Read those names again.
Don Shula, Brian Griese, Dan Marino.
Okay, stop right there. Do you think we meant Brian Griese? So clearly,
yeah.
That should have been Bob Griese.
Yes.
There's no way in the world Brian Griese is on the Dolphins Mount Rushmore.
Definitely not.
It is the only mistake that we have found. So I feel sick about it. Hembo called me about three weeks ago. The book has been printed. It's out. There's literally nothing we can do. And he calls me and he says, Greeny, I was just looking. We just got our copy sent to us. He said, you're not going to believe
it. Yeah, you got the sun.
We all missed it. It says Brian Griese. And there's nothing we can do about it. So my endless apologies to the Griese family,
yeah,
to Dolphins fans everywhere, and to anyone within the
sun. If you got to take sides, you like the sun more. It's fine. You like Brian. You thought Brian did a great job in those 10 years, huh?
Clearly, that should be Bob Griese.
Greeny, that's, first of all, fascinating that slipped through the cracks, dozens of people that read through it. I mean, that's got to drive you crazy. You can't ever look at the Dolphins ever again. But number one, I'm curious too. I have a couple. I went through basically most of these, and the Jason Taylor selection, I personally disagree with. And I was curious on the decision process behind. Shula, Griese, and Marino make a lot of sense. I think those are the three locks. I thought somebody like Larry Sanka should have been, you want to talk about championships, I thought somebody like Larry Sanka should have been somebody with a little bit more, I guess, consideration in this position. Talk about Taylor versus Sanka.
Those teams, I'm old enough to have watched them. The first Super Bowl I actually have a conscious memory of watching was the 14-7 game when they beat Washington, the Garo Yepremian game. So I go back to that era. And those teams are remembered first for the no-name defense, second for Zonka and Kick, third for the Hall of Fame quarterback. So I fully recognize that we put the quarterback on the team and didn't put any of the defenders or either of the two legendary running backs, of whom Zonka would have been the choice, on the list. But at no point was Larry Zonka, as great a player as he was and as important a piece of that team as he was, and maybe the perfect fit for that team that he was, in that era, if you would ask people then to name the best running backs in the sport, his name would not have come up. He played at the same time as O.J. Simpson and Franco Harris and Chuck Foreman and a number of other running backs who were greater than he was at the time. Jason Taylor, for a period of time there, was the best defensive end in the sport, or certainly on the very short list of the best defensive ends in the sport. I don't have all of the stats in front of me that we used, but when we went over the accolades, his career actually...
he's a defensive player of the year.
It aged extremely well. His career, his accomplishments actually age extremely well. And the thing you hold against him is that they didn't do any high-level winning. So we look, there are a lot of Dolphins that we considered. Paul Warfield in his time is one of the great wide receivers. But before receivers became what they are, before receivers started putting up numbers that started looking like pinball machines when San Diego kind of changed the sport in the late 70s, and all of a sudden offensive numbers changed in the sport. Warfield in the earlier days was one of the great receivers. You could a handful of players from the defense, from Nick Bonacani, those teams. Zonka would have been, I think, the next choice. And then Dwight Stevenson, who is one of the great offensive linemen of his era. My old radio partner, Mike Golick, used to tell me how he was an unbelievable player and how everyone recognized how great he was at his time. That was a tough choice. And I don't have all of the numbers in front of me. I wish I did. But as we looked it over closely, and that's the beauty of the book. I want to have these discussions and debates. With an eyelash, we went Jason Taylor.
Greeny, in your eyes, is Don Shula the best coach in football? You know, he's got. I'm a Northeast Ohio guy myself. You know, went to John Carroll. Do you see Shula as the best coach of all time in the National Football League?
Well, I am a person who separates best and greatest. So his accomplishments, he won more games than anybody else did. He was the coach of several of the greatest teams of all time, including the only undefeated Super Bowl champion ever. And those Colts teams, which frankly were probably better. Mm. And I think if Shula was not on the wrong side of the most famous and significant, historically significant upset ever, his career would have aged a little differently. So Shula, the things that work against him are he lost that game. He lost the Super Bowl as an 18-point favorite. And as obviously before he got to Miami. And then the back end of his career, while there was a lot of winning, there was no high-end winning. He had Dan Marino as his quarterback for whatever period of time, however many years they were together. It had to be at least a decade. Again, I don't have it all my research in front of me.
Right.
And they never won anything. Those things work against him if we're splitting hairs. So Don Shula, I think, is on the Mount Rushmore of coaches. I think if we're looking at the history of the great coaches in the sport, Lombardi has to be on it. Belichick has to be on it. And then you start debating. I would love to have this conversation, you know, Colin, with your father and whoever else wants to get involved in it. Who take the other two spots? Shula is a very, very worthy contender for those. I would argue Bill Walsh.
Yeah, Walsh, I was going to say.
How innovative he was, not only how great his teams were, but teams in the NFL are still running his offense. I mean, teams in the National Football League are running variations on an offense that he created almost five decades ago. So I think Walsh would be in the discussion. Shula would definitely be in the conversation. If you ask me to name the greatest coaches in NFL history, I think I would put Lombardi and Belichick ahead of him, but he would be right there.
Since we're on the topic, Paul Brown, Greeny, interested in that as well.
He's got to be there too. He's on the Browns list.
Yep.
The Browns.
He's on the Bengals.
The Browns. Well. Were, The Browns are a great example of one of the reasons I'm proud of this book. Like, Colin, when J.J. Redick got on your dad and saying the thing about Bob Cousy and everything, that pissed me off so much. I like J.J. But greatness in sports can only be judged relative to the era in which people existed.
1,000%.
So the idea that Bob Cousy, if he had been born 50 years later and was able to avail himself of the same nutrition and training and everything else that everyone was doing, and sports were as high-end a business as they have become, so you didn't have to worry about other things and stuff, he would have been just as great in any era. You can only judge athletes relative to the era in which they play.
Yep.
The Cleveland Browns are one of the historically great franchises in pro football history. Fans who are under the age of 40 think the Browns are a laughingstock.
Yep.
The Browns of Otto Graham and then Jim Brown were a dominant franchise in pro football. So Paul Brown is on their list and he's on the Bengals list. But the point I'm making is Brown also, his coordinators were Vince Lombardi and Tom Landry. So, I mean, his coaching tree is one of the most significant coaching trees, if not the best. How much better than that are you going to do? Landry is another one that I would have in consideration, by the way, for the greatest coaches of all time. So Paul Brown is an historically incredibly important figure in football history, and definitely I don't think he would make the coaching Mount Rushmore, but he'd be someone that you'd have to talk about.
Now, one of the only coaches to do college and Super Bowl, but I understand the point, Greeny.
Now, Greeny, I went through this, and you have, luckily, it's all right, you know, ranked, and she could see all four of them, basically the whole thing. I have a couple that I'd like to throw at you, and more than a couple. I have about 15, but I don't think we have time for 15. Well, I have a couple.
I have as much time as you have.
Great. So we'll keep you here until 6 if we have the opportunity to, but I'm kidding. 76ers. Dolph Schayes, Julius Erving, Allen Iverson, Joel Embiid. There's an elephant in the room. Why is Joel Embiid on this list?
So, tell me who you put there instead.
Moses Malone.
Yeah.
Joel Embiid was an MVP. Okay. Moses Malone, his greatest years by far were in Houston.
Right, but he won an MVP and a Finals MVP. Keep that in mind. And he was on the best team in the franchise's history in 83.
Not only were they the best team in the franchise's history, but I would contend that for any one individual season, and I covered the 96 Bulls who won 72 games, that for any one individual season, the most dominant team I ever saw were the 83 76ers. They swept the Knicks as part of that I'm a New Yorker like you are. I grew up with Knicks season tickets. I was at those games in New York. The Knicks played them tough in game 3, and Andrew Toney hit a shot at the very end. That won game 3, and it was 3-0, and they wound up sweeping the Knicks on their way to what turned out to be 5-4. They didn't sweep Milwaukee. But Moses, I think Embiid also won an MVP. He's been there. On the Sixers a lot longer than Moses was.
Hold on. Now, he has not played in a big game for them. I don't want to cut you off, but come on. He hasn't even made the conference finals. If we're talking about the championships, shouldn't that one year – you have a number of people on the list, including the Steelers, which we'll get to. You have this – where if they're a part of, like, a big part of that franchise's history, a big team, you favored that team. That 83 Sixer team, other than the Syracuse National, all those teams – that is the team for the Sixers, which is why – and Moses was the best player on that team. So that's why I was curious in your perspective here.
He was – now, I mean, I remember him saying it's Doc's team, but he was saying that out of deference to Julius Erving. Moses Malone was the best player on that team. So I've got to be honest with you. You make a very good point. I think I relied a lot on Hembo for this one because he is from Philadelphia.
Oh, he wanted
and
we Embiid.
Went to a lot of, and I think he may have talked me into this one. So you guys got to call him and yell at him because I think he may have – this is one where you may have me.
All right, how about this? You said you did a lot of coverage with the Bulls. Let's jump to it, but you mentioned the Knicks. Marv Albert is on the Knicks list. I know we love Marv.
Death.
Come on. The Ewing, Willis Reed, absolutely, Walt Frazier, no contest. That fourth one is tricky. You could go in a couple different directions. You could go from the 70s teams. You could go from later days. You put Marv Albert. This is a historic franchise. You're going to put Marv Albert here?
It is a historic, let's face it, it is a historically terrible franchise. The New York Knicks, who played in the very first ever NBA game, have won 2 championships. They had the, we could have so from those teams, Monroe was on one of the title teams, not both.
What about DeBuscher?
Bradley, DeBuscher, greats. We considered Red Holtzman, whom I loved.
Yep.
But the high level winning. Carmelo Anthony never won anything of consequence in a Knick uniform. My favorite player as a kid was Bernard King. His peak was as good as anybody's. Marv Albert was the voice of the New York Knicks from 1967 to 2004. I believe that Marv Albert had a relationship with the fans of the New York Knicks that is deeper and more meaningful than that of any of the players that we otherwise could have placed there. Monroe would have been the closest to it, I think, because he has remained so beloved and remains connected distantly to the franchise. Clyde was a no-brainer. But the Marv Albert one I will fight to the death. There are a very few broadcasters that we put on this list. Right. Bob Uecker is on the Brewers list. Vin Scully yep. is on the Dodgers list. Marv, and there may be one or two more. I'm not doing it off the top of my head.
Right.
But the Marv one, Marv Albert, if you grew up in New York at any time when he was doing their games, then for the rest of your life, the game of basketball will sound like Marv Albert's voice. To this day, when I'm watching a basketball game, I'm in my mind hearing Marv Albert's voice. And I believe I speak for everyone who grew up in New York while he was the voice of the Knicks. That one I will defend to the death. I certainly understand the argument that could be made. The players you would consider there, I guess, would be Bradley.
DeBuscher is the one I was looking at. He was the best defensive player on that team. And you mentioned a franchise that has done a whole lot of nothing. And you got the right. Of that championship team, if you were to pluck another one, it would be probably from that era.
Half the list is from that team. And then Ewing, who is the greatest player in the history of the franchise, and his relationship with the fan base is complicated. Let me quickly go to that. I'll read you what I wrote about Marv.
And I'm curious, because while you said that, Ken Harrelson was another one that you put on there for a broadcaster.
Hawk Harrelson, yes. Yeah. So I lived and worked in Chicago and covered sports in Chicago for 11 years. And Hawk Harrelson was an incredibly important part of a White Sox organization that has not had a whole lot of high-level success. Where the hell are the Knicks in here? Hold on a
second. I agree. I didn't grow up with it, but I would just say if you're going to highlight a team, the 70s Knicks, and you can make it, if the Knicks do something with Brunson, he is right there instead of Marv. But I just sit here and I say I would pluck another one from that 70s teams, and I understand Bernard King probably wasn't there long enough. But DeBuscher was the one I was looking at. There's no right answer, but that was the one I wanted to bring up with you. I have a number of other ones. But what did you say about Marv Albert? Did you find it there?
I wrote what I said here. Marv Albert was the voice. So I mentioned that the phrase, when I write about Willis Reed, I say the phrase, "Here comes Willis," is among the most famous collection of words in New York sports history. And then I wrote, "The man who spoke those words deserves his space here as well." Marv Albert was the voice of the Knicks from 1967 through 2004. His call synonymous with all the highs and lows of generations of fans. Albert, of course, also broadcast games nationally on blah, blah, blah. But his connection to the fans in his hometown as the announcer for both the Knicks and the NHL's Rangers was as deep as any broadcasters in America. That one I will defend. What's the next?
Now, Greeny, I told you I'm a Northeast Ohio kid. The Steelers terrorized me growing up. You don't have the boogeyman on there.
Yeah, Chuck Noll, Joe Green, Bradshawn Harris. That's all from one era.
Correct. That's my gripe. But also, you don't have the boogeyman on there. And that's Ben Roethlisberger.
Is that Roethlisberger?
The guy who could eat a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, hold three defenders off him, and throw a 60-yard touchdown. Two-time Super Bowl winner, too. You know, I probably, and you're probably going to get on me for this, I take off Franco Harris. I understand maybe, I know you hate this, but a little bit before my time, but I mean, geez, Ben Roethlisberger, two Super Bowls, and really carried that team for two plus decades. He's got to be on there, Greeny.
Franco Harris won four Super Bowls, but
Here's the defense, thing.
It's one era. It's talking about your balancing era. You can make an argument that the Steelers were like the Knicks, and there's only the 70s. But the Steelers also have the 2000s, and you got to give at least some credibility to that. And there was no representation there. That's the one.
And 05, sorry, boys, one more thing. Like when Roethlisberger came in, they started winning. Like they had touchdown Tommy Maddox. They weren't able to do it
immediately.
Cowher got Ben Roethlisberger and finally won the trophy. And then the famous saying is Mike Tomlin won with Cowher's team with Ben Roethlisberger. So I'm interested to hear the rebuttal here.
So here's what I would say. Historical significance and relevance are one of the things we took into account. Pro football is what it is today because of the Steelers and the Cowboys in the 70s. That is a fact. The Pittsburgh Steelers and the Dallas Cowboys in the 70s, if WWE, which can script whatever it wants, had created a perfect rivalry to elevate a sport from what it was at the beginning of that decade, which was a secondary sport in America, maybe one on an ascent, but definitively less popular than baseball and less important than baseball, to what it was at the end of that decade, which was the most important sport, the most popular sport, a culture, a bordering on religious connection to the fans of this country. That was created by the rivalry of the blue-collar Pittsburgh Steelers, who represented that city perfectly, and the glamorous Hollywood-esque Dallas Cowboys with a star on their helmet, with their quarterback from the Navy with his crew cut and their coach wearing a fedora and their cheerleaders on the sidelines. That changed pro football forever. Pro football in the same way that Magic Johnson and Larry Bird changed basketball. You can basically look at basketball as being divided up into the time before them and the time after them. I would say you can look at pro football the same way. Before the Cowboys and Steelers of the 70s and after. And that team was so important that I feel it deserved all of the spots. As far as Franco Harris is concerned, Franco Harris made the most famous play in football history. Number one, every single list you see, you got David Tyree's helmet catch, and you've got Santonio Holmes in the corner of the end zone, and you've got whatever else you want, that Mike Jones making a tackle on the 1 yard line to win a game of a Super Bowl. And what was the guy? Malcolm Butler intercepting.
Yeah, Dwight Clark.
All of those plays, Dwight Clark, the catch, everything else. The Immaculate Reception is the greatest, most important, and most famous play in pro football history. That counts for something. If you fly into Pittsburgh to this day, that play took place in 1972. This is 53 years later. When you land in Pittsburgh and you get off your plane, there is a statue, not in front of the stadium, in the freaking airport, of Franco Harris leaning down to catch that ball. That means something. That matters for something. So to me, Franco had to be there. The argument for me
would be Bradshaw
was between Bradshaw and Roethlisberger, because those teams were defined first and foremost by defense, which is Joe Green. Joe Green, who was on one of the five greatest defensive players of all time. The five greatest defensive players.
There's no issue there. I agree.
He's on it. He's on it, Greeny. He was the face of the steel curtain. He's on it.
Reggie White and Lawrence Taylor. Joe Green is right there. Dick Butkus is right there with any of them. I felt Noel had to be there. For the longest time, he was the only coach with four Super Bowl championships because Walsh didn't win a fourth one. So until Belichick, Noel was alone in that. And that's a long time. I mean, to have been the only guy to win four Super Bowls over the first 40 years, whatever it was, closer to maybe 50 years, well, 40-something years anyway. So Noel, I felt, had to be there. Green had to be there. Yeah. Franco, because of the Immaculate Reception, Franco was ahead of Bradshaw.
Right.
I can even listen to that. Yeah. 100%.
Look, we did not purposely put them in an order. They're not intent. There's no like Washington and then Lincoln. Yep. And then like the four are the four. They're equally weighted. So Bradshaw's name, I don't know if they did it, if they wound up doing it alphabetically or how they, I don't know how they chose the order in which they put them.
Random.
But
it looks like.
Right, yep.
I think it is random. Bradshaw was not ahead. Bradshaw is fourth, was our fourth choice. And we strongly considered Roethlisberger for that spot. But in the end, like, four Super Bowls just trumped two Super Bowls. Like the entire list of quarterbacks in NFL history to have won four Super Bowls is Brady, Montana, and Bradshaw. And that just means something. So that was a tough one, Mike. And I'm not telling you that you're wrong.
No, totally. I just look at the eras, Greeny. Like Roethlisberger, like he brought the Steelers back, right? And forgive me, 05 was the first Super Bowl since
They got there in the 90s, the Neil Donaldson game where they lost against the Cowboys.
But that was like that was the birth of the new age of the Steelers. So that's the only reason I was kind of nitpicking you on that.
For the first 50% of their existence, they were awful.
Right.
The Pittsburgh Steelers were the worst franchise in the sport. They're a founding franchise or practically of the NFL history. Up until Noel got there, they were terrible. And then they got Joe Green, and then they had the greatest draft in the history of the sport, and then they ran the sport for a decade. So I understand the argument, but I feel that and I did the same thing with the Bulls, by the way.
You sure did.
I did the same thing with the Bulls. All of the Bulls that we chose are from that run in the 90s. Even though Derrick Rose was obviously a great player, even though Jerry Sloan was a terrific player for them, Bob Love was
Artis
a terrific
Gilmore.
Player for them. They had other great players. Gilmore was a very good player. But, I mean, Michael and Scotty went without saying.
Yep.
Will Jackson, I thought, went without saying.
Yeah, but you could get rid of Krause and put in Rose. That was on my list. Yeah. I wanted to get
Greeny, we're going to give that iPad. Greeny, we're going to give that iPad that you saw in The Last Dance to Michael Jordan.
Hey, he's going to see in 98.
He's going to see Jerry Krause on that iPad, and one Michael Jordan wouldn't be too happy, I feel like. But I understand he was the – he was the artist of the team. I mean, you go back to when they added Tony Kukoc, you know, when Michael D'd the hell out of him in the Olympics. Like, I understand why he's there. But I guess, like, Greeny, I got this thing stuck in my mind where you need eras. Like, did the Bulls run into LeBron James in the Eastern Conference? Sure. But if they didn't, you know, they probably win a couple of those years. So I'm interested to hear that as well.
The Bulls, to me, are where they are. The Bulls are ranked very high among the basketball franchises. So
12. If you look at what 12 overall.
They're 12, which puts them on tier 2, which means they're the number 3 ranked basketball franchise. We put them after the Celtics and the Lakers. So they are that for only one reason. Because the rest of their history is very forgettable. Like the San Antonio, they're ahead of the Spurs. Even though the Spurs have only one less championship, and the Spurs, since the merger, the Spurs have the second highest winning percentage in the NBA, sandwiched between the Lakers and the Celtics. And they have an unbelievable Mount Rushmore with Robinson and Duncan and Popovich. But the Bulls are there only because they were the Beatles. I was there.
Yeah.
I covered those teams. I traveled with them. That I was not around. I obviously did not travel with the Beatles, but I can only imagine that must have been what it was like.
Greeny, we're not
Jerry Krause.
Yeah, go continue. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Jerry Krause traded Will Perdue straight up for Dennis Rodman. Jerry Krause acquired on one draft night Scottie Pippen and Horace Grant. Jerry Krause kept a revolving door of role players around those guys. He got Ron Harper from Cleveland. He got Trent Tucker. He didn't bring Paxson there, but he brought Steve Kerr there. He acquired all of those guys. He also plucked Phil Jackson, who was coaching for the Albany Patroons in the CBA, and everyone in the NBA thought he was too weird and too out there to be an NBA coach, and he single-handedly brought him there and recognized how great he was and fired a very successful Doug Collins to give Phil Jackson that job. Jerry Krause did all of those things, and they didn't put him in the Hall of Fame until he was dead, and that's because he was a cantankerous and somewhat disheveled man. I was around him all the time. He wasn't friendly. He wasn't easy to be around. And he was sort of an easy target. And because they did not, and a lot of this really was based on ownership, and Krause took a lot of the heat for it, they wouldn't redo Scottie Pippen's contract. And Pippen got enraged about it. And all the players got mad about it. And they blamed that on Krause when it really had a lot more to do with ownership than anything else. They didn't put Jerry Krause, the architect of six championships in the Hall of Fame until he was dead. And then when they celebrated those teams, the fans booed his widow. It was an outrage. It was a disgrace. It was the most ashamed I've ever been of any fan base in my life to see what happened there. So maybe part of that was my own bias, but I think Jerry Krause is ill-remembered. Jerry Krause did his job. He was not an easy person to be around. I wasn't friendly with him. He was friendly with almost anybody who was around at that time. He was cantankerous and a little bit nasty, but he was brilliant. He was unbelievably good at his job. Go find me another basketball architect, however you want to describe that job, aside from Red Auerbach, whoever did more. I'm not sure you can do it. Maybe Jerry West. I think he's right there with those guys.
Greeny, we could do this quite literally all day. I appreciate the time. I appreciate you going in depth with us. It really was a true treat to have you on. Appreciated it. And, you know, the other teams, that just you don't have to respond to any of them because we don't have the time. Chiefs, I wanted to hear about Andy Reid. I wanted to hear about Michael Jordan with the Hornets. I wanted to hear about the Cincinnati Bengals and Joe Burrow instead of Esiason or Ken Anderson. I had a lot on the list, but the book is awesome. This is why you do it. This is why you have these types of discussions. This is why you write this thing, and we look forward to really breaking it down soon again. I appreciate it, Greeny. We'll talk soon, all right?
Thank you. Thanks, Greeny.
Two quick things. If I could just say two quick things. One, this is the best interview that I've done. I've done 2 days worth of basically nonstop. This was the best interview that I've done. And you guys are obviously both young guys just getting started. So I take it from an old guy. You're doing great because this was the best interview I've done. Secondly, very quickly for anyone listening, Amazon is doing a special offer for the listeners during my radio tour. So as I'm doing all of these radio shows, if you order from Amazon right now, the book Got Your Legends, I'm the author, Mike Greenberg, you will get it at a special discounted price. So I wanted to mention that for anyone who is interested. Thank you very much, guys. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you, Greeny.
That means the world. I appreciate it. All right, take care.
Take care, guys.
Mike Greenberg, host of Get Up, ESPN, longtime ESPN, ESPN Radio. You can hear him all there. You can also get his book today, Got Your Legends, as you can see there. Appreciate it as always. We got to get to break. That's Mike Rizzo, Colin Russo, Christian Cat, Russo and Rizzo, ESPN, 106.3. Kane is in the building.
Let's get back to the Anajar and Levine Accident Attorney Studios. This is Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3.
Big thanks to Greeny, Mike Greenberg, for joining us previously, previewing his new book, Got Your Legends. It is out, ranks the top 124 Mount Rushmores in professional sports throughout the NFL, NBA, MLB, and NHL franchises. We appreciate the time. It was a great interview. Miss any of that, go listen, Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, just search up Russo and Rizzo, or go watch back on ESPN West Palm. Well, you got a lot to look forward to this weekend. Ryder Cup action. MLB is kicking things off tonight with really the last five or so games of the year, getting down into the digits of it. And then you also got college football in the NFL this weekend. A lot to look forward to and a lot to bet on Hard Rock Bet.
Ton of fun stuff, Kyle. I'm already putting together my parlays for Sunday on that NFL slate. I'm already putting together my Saturday college football parlays. How about that 7:30 slate? You got the Georgia and Alabama game, Georgia hosting Bama, and then you have the whiteout game, baby, Penn State, Beaver Stadium, hosting the Oregon Ducks. I'm getting, no pun intended, my ducks in a row with my good friends at Hard Rock Bet. And did I mention college football? Because college football is at its best when you're a part of the action. Sign up today with our good friends at Hard Rock Bet and bet $5 on any game. If it wins, you also score $150 in bonus bets. So put that money where your mouth is, man. $5 for $150, are you kidding me? Put it on your most confident pick with Hard Rock Bet. And if you're looking for an edge on your next bet, find crazy trends and stats on Hard Rock Bet with the Stats Hub. You could find the hottest streaks, the latest line moves, and more. That is our good friends with Hard Rock Bet. Offered by the Seminole Tribe of Florida, must be 21 plus and physically present in Florida to wager. Terms and conditions apply. If you're concerned about gambling, call 1-888-ADMIT-IT.
Appreciate Mike Greenberg giving us the time. We caught him on the 76ers.
We did, and
that was not his decision.
No, it wasn't. But like, my thing is,
he just threw Hembo under the bus. Yeah, that was Hembo. He's a Philly guy.
I'm fine, but like, at the same time, Hembo being a Philly guy, don't those people, I say those people, don't they hate Joel Embiid?
Yeah.
Like, don't you guys
want him out of town?
Yeah. Like, you try, like, and did they have beef? Remember what Joel Embiid said in those press conferences about Philly fan? I don't know. Very odd that Philly guy Hembo would put Embiid on that list and not Moses Malone. Best player on that championship team. Colin, they won the championship because of Moses Malone, the way he played in the finals. So, and then I'm sorry, the Ben Roethlisberger thing, I had to throw that out. You know, boys, you know who I root for, man. That guy was the boogeyman. He was everything you wanted at the quarterback position. It is another fan of the team in the AFC North. I even argue a Raven fan.
I can understand, and he was right in terms of his explanation of Franco Harris. Franco Harris was probably the most important aspect of that team. That was a rushing attack team with a great defense. Franco, you get somebody from the defense, you get somebody from Franco Harris. If you take somebody out, you take out Bradshaw.
Is Franco Harris even top 15 running back of all time?
But he's the most. But he was a great postseason player. That was the problem That's true, though. But like he was, you know. Roethlisberger, you're talking about the quarterback there. If you want to put two quarterbacks on there, I understand that. But if you're trying to balance it, you need to put Joe Green on there because of defensive presence. You need to put the head coach on there.
Now, I understand Greeny's explanation of the most pulverized, the most known play, a huge play that's happened in the history of the sport.
And he said it ignited the NBA a la Celtics, Lakers, Cowboys, Steelers.
I go back to how important the quarterback position is in the NFL. Like Bradshaw was the guy calling the shots for those teams way back when, but Roethlisberger was the Roethlisberger brought the Steelers back to relevance.
You can't win two titles and there's nothing there.
Correct, with two different coaches too. Yeah. I understand people say that's Cowher's team, but it worked with Tomlin and it worked
and
with Cowher.
And there's something about winning in Brady's era. That is going to pay its dividends. Once Hall of Fame voting comes out, you're always going to look back and say, well, he stole one when Brady was at his height.
Yeah.
Which is why Eli Manning will get into the Hall of Fame. That period is because he stole one in the era in which Brady was dominating. Mm. So there's something to that as well. Jerry Krause, the one thing about Jerry Krause, he sold me a little bit.
I think he did too. You took the words right
from
me.
He sold me a little bit.
There's no better.
Jerry Krause has such a bad PR because of The Last Dance.
Correct. And now I feel bad by telling Greeny, you know, we're going to have Jordan look at the iPad style. But like, Colin, who's a better GM than Jerry Krause in the National Basketball Association?
Right. Yeah.
Myers comes to mind.
Myers has come up. Absolutely.
Pat Riley
is an executive. Yeah.
Okay. But like, six championships and the moves that Greeny said that he made.
Well, because he flipped
getting
the team.
Ron Harper.
First three-peat to the second three-peat. Right. It's a different team.
And I even go back to I brought up the Tony Kukoc thing.
Yep.
The players didn't want him. They bullied him in the Olympics. And then he comes on and is a huge part of the championship team.
Yeah, he's a huge part of the in-betweeners too when they were playing the Knicks. When Scottie Pippen was taking himself out of the game, that's when Kukoc was stepping up in the years they didn't have Jordan.
Correct.
Go get Vitacost today because Vitacost is your spot if you're looking to take your fitness to the next level. Fitness conscious, just trying to be a little more healthier if you're training for something. The nutrition and the supplementation is really 80% of the work. You got to make sure that you're on top of things, and Vitacost Sports Certified Marketplace is your place to understand this clean supplementation and nutrition. They got 400-plus clean products on the Sports Certified Marketplace, and you could go vitacost.com/sport-certified today to make that purchase, because for somebody like me who's just coming off the Ironman training, I don't know where I would have been. I probably would have been DNF, do not finish, if I did not have my supplements with Vitacost throughout my training. Go check it out today, vitacost.com/sport-certified to make your purchase today. ESPN20 for 20% off. ESPN20 for 20% off. Well, Greeny took up most of the second hour, but for good reason. Appreciate him giving us the time. That's Mike Rizzo. Big thanks to Christian Katt keeping us up over the air. We'll be back at it tomorrow, live from the park. Having a good time there on the road. Stick around for that because that'll be 4 to 6 p.m. As always, this has been Colin Russo saying so long. We'll see you next time. If you miss any of the show, Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast, just search up Russo and Rizzo. And check us out on socials, ESPN, West Palm, all those great spots. Colin Russo, so long. Enjoy your Wednesday. Enjoy some baseball. Back at it tomorrow, 4 to 6 p.m. on ESPN 106.3.